Football.
It's the football, 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 and sometimes other sports show. Here's your host, AJ Nicoletti.
What up? FFFSOSS.com. At FFFSOSS, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch.tv/AJNick3. Masters Week, folks. Masters Week. So we'll have an 88th Masters preview on the program, an in-depth preview. We'll go over the last previous winners, weather, course changes, storylines, odds, picks, a in-depth 88th Masters preview on the pod to look forward to. Then we'll talk Champions League quarterfinal first legs, some awesome matches in the Champions League both Tuesday and Wednesday, so hopefully you enjoyed that. A weekend soccer preview and more. That is the program, the rundown for this pod on a Thursday. Next week might be coming to you a little delayed because later in the show there's a game that we'll be talking about that I'll be going to, Liverpool Crystal Palace. So I'll be in the building, okay? As Francis would say, I'll be in Anfield on Sunday for Liverpool Crystal Palace. So pod might be a day or two delayed next week, the Masters recap. So if you're like, where the hell's the Masters recap, bro? We like the Masters recap. Where's the Masters recap? It's coming. It might be a day or two delayed. My bad. But it will come. All right. So 88th Masters preview, Champions League quarterfinal first legs, weekend soccer preview, pretty much a rundown for this Thursday edition of the pod. So kick it off with an 88th Masters preview. The last five winners, and they're all relatively similar scores besides one. Last year, the Spanish champion, John Rahm, 12 under. 2022, Scotty Scheffler was 10 under. 2021, Hideki Matsuyama, Japan's champion, 10 under. DJ in the November edition got to 20 under in 2020. And Tiger Woods in 2019, 13 under. So you have two 10-unders, a 12-under, a 13-under, and obviously DJ's 20, which was a differently played Masters from what it's obviously going to be played like in April than it was in November. So same type of scores, you know, low double digits, nothing crazy, like 18 consistently like it's been previous years, or breaking scoring records or like that, or nothing really like 2-under or something like that. So you score, you're going to have an opportunity to be in the tournament and have a chance to win it on the second nine on Sunday. Let's go to the weather. Early in the week, there's been some rain. It's been some cloud cover. It hasn't been crazy, but Thursday, here comes the rain. They've already told spectators not to show up, and they'll have more information in the morning on Thursday. But high of 76, low of 55, partly cloudy, 95% chance of rain. Wind is out of the south at 16 miles per hour. So Thursday, big chance of getting washed out. Friday, you probably could see possibly 36 holes and into Saturday, then a cut Saturday morning, and then try to finish out Saturday. So the good thing about the rain on Thursday, it seems like that's the only rain in the forecast, because Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all mostly are sunny. Friday, high of 73, low of 54% rain. Wind flips to the west at 60 miles an hour. Saturday, high of 78. Low of 55, 1% chance of rain, west-northwest wind, 7 miles per hour. And then Sunday, 84 the high, 61 the low, 4% rain, wind dies down, or actually picks up a mile per hour, but changes direction again to southwest. So relatively south or a west wind, and then Saturday it's a west-northwest, which is not tremendously different than a southwest, but still coming from that general area. So that is what the weather will be like in Augusta for the players. How about the course changes? And usually we've had a bunch the last few years, whether it's been tee boxes or greens moved or fairway, you know, where they do cut the first cut. So there's only been one announced, but apparently Golf Digest watched the Augusta National Women's Amateur last Saturday, and they saw a bunch of changes on the front side. So we'll highlight those. I'll just tell you where, when I'm quoting the article for that to give credit to the Golf Digest. But the announced change, the par 5 second, where you have to score there. We know that when we break down the holes in a little bit. But They moved the tee back 10 yards and shifted it to the left. So they make the draw a little more severe. And for faders, you might have to deal with some branches. So you might not have mid-iron into that par 5 anymore. I think they're going to want people hitting bigger clubs, at least higher irons. You know, and not like wedges or 9 irons or 8 irons. They want like a 3 iron or a 2 iron or a wood into that green instead of like the middle irons, middle to low irons. All right, so that's the only announced change. Unannounced is according to Golf Digest. So 3 modifications they saw that were apparent in the Augusta National Women's Amateur, all on the first 9. So, quote, the back part of the second green has been enlarged towards the middle. While the slope off the right green side bunker has been somewhat leveled, the former allows for the hole location. The former allows for another hole location, while the latter negates the use of the front right portion of the green as a backstop for putts coming from the other side of the green on the Sunday pin. So, changing a little bit of the terrain on 2 when they've already announced they moved the tee back, and then they changed a little bit of the green. Now, 4 is a par 3. Quote, the green's front right slope has been softened, and though this likewise negates any backboard of sort of putts above the hole, it also keeps proper approach shots from bunker shots from ricocheting away from the pin. So they became a little more forgiving on that 4th green, and then on the 6th, quote, perhaps the most notable change when it comes to tournament play will be the par 3 6th, one of the more difficult holes on the course comes Sunday, ranking 5th in the final round. Last year, the back right plateau has been enlarged and the back left section has been flattened during Saturday's Augusta National Women's Amateur. Balls that would have usually funneled off the green were able to stay within 25 to 30 feet of the back right pin. And the hope is that more approaches to a back left pin will be rewarded. Conversely, slopes off the back right plateau have been enhanced, making the penalty for a miss more severe. So in some spots, they've softened it up on 6. In other spots, they've made it hard. So one announced change at 2. You had Golf Digest pick up the 3 that were unannounced. And then let's just talk briefly about the previous changes before we get into the hole-by-hole kind of thing. Last year, 2023, you had the new tee box at 13, 8 feet higher up, 35 yards back. So it added another question on that tee of, hey, you have room to hook the ball around if you're a right-hand player, but you better do it, otherwise you're still in the pine straw. So that was a change in 2013. 2022, you had multiple changes at tees and multiple greens redone. So 2022, 11, they moved it back 11 yards and to the left, and they had the several trees removed on the right, which created a little bit of an alley. 15, they moved it back 20 yards, the par 5, and then 18, they moved back 13 yards. The greens at 3, 13, and 17 were all redone in 2022. So over the past 3 years, 3 greens redone, 5 new tee boxes between 11, 15, 18, 13 last year, and this year with 2. And they've also apparently, but they haven't announced it, apparently they've done things with 2's green, 4's green, and 6 greens, according to Golf Digest. So we'll see. All right, now into the holes, breaking down the course. You have opportunities to score, but there are other holes where if you get par, it's almost like a U.S. Open par, which is like a birdie. So 4, 5, 11, just if you get birdie there, you're stealing. Make your par and go to the next hole. 1 and 7 are traditionally tough to score on as well. And the 4 out of the 5 holes I just named are all on that front side, that first side. Sorry, shouldn't have said front or back. It's first and second sides at Augusta. Obviously, we know that, right? So 4, not a birdie hole. 5, not a birdie hole. 1 and 7 are tough. 11, not a birdie hole. 3 is scorable. There's a couple of different ways to play it. You can kind of hammer driver or 3-wood up there and give yourself, you know, 50 yards or less, or you can maybe hit an iron off the tee and play for 85 to 115. So a bunch of options on that par 4 third where if you're coming off a birdie, if you can get another one after par in your first and you're 2 under through three, you're feeling pretty confident about your game going into some hard holes where you can almost, hey, okay, I did bogey four or I did bogey six, and you say, okay, I can get it back at eight, and if I par nine, I'm in a fine spot kind of a thing. So two, you got to score on. Three, you probably got to score on the front. Two, the par five. Eight, the other par five on the first side, and then famously 13 and 15 on the second side. You have to score there. Birdie is almost the minimum. Like, par might not kill you. Par might not lose the tournament for you. Par might not knock you out of contention, but you got to understand there are guys that might eagle that. There's definitely guys that are going to birdie that hole, and you're going to lose strokes to those guys and those other competitors. And you definitely cannot bogey or worse. Now, if you bogey one of them in 4 days, maybe you can get away with it if you eagle one of them or birdie a bunch of them on the weekend, if you do it on Thursday or Friday and it doesn't cost you the cut. But you can't. The most you can do here is bogey the six, and the six is gonna, you're gonna throw up when you see it on those holes. But if you get a seven, that's it, goodbye, because you got guys getting threes or fours on that hole easily. You can't give up three shots like this on this golf course because there are so many hard shots, and you are gonna miss a couple short ones that you needed. You know how many of these guys miss a 5 or 6 footer for par, and you're like, wow, you really could have used that. And that derails them at this golf course. So, two, early on in your round, either bounce back from a bogey or par the first and get under par after two. If you struggled through some of that tough run in the middle of that first side, eight, you got to score on. Nine, you kind of take your medicine and go play 10, which is a tough hole, as we know. 10 is a very difficult hole if you can't draw the ball, because then it takes a very big club out of your hand. We've seen, you know, and Scottie Scheffler, Tiger agreed with him pretty much on what they were saying, but Scottie Scheffler basically said, my driver is set up for me to fade the ball. I really can't draw it with the way it's set up in my golf swing with my driver, so I can just drop down to 3 wood, free swing it, and kind of just improvise this right to left draw thing that I'm just throwing out there with this crazy foot finish and position finish with the golf club and follow through. So 10 is a very difficult hole. If you make par, sprint to 11. If you make par, sprint to 12. If you make par, sprint to 13 and try to get an eagle or birdie. You know, 12, yeah, you can steal a birdie once in a while at 12, but that's about hit the green, 2-putt, and get out of there. You know, if you do miss a green in the bunker, hit a good bunker shot, give yourself a par opportunity. You don't want to drop a ton of shots there. You know, like, the worst you could do is hit in the bunker, you miss your putt, you get a 4, fine. You go to 13 and you get it back, fine. Okay. You can't hit it in the water. You can't leave yourself in those bushes and trees and azaleas behind the green. You can't be doing that. So, amen, corner. 11. It's long, it's downhill, the pond on the left kills you. The green is very difficult and slopes hard towards that water. You have the mounds in front blocking, just running it up. 11 is such a difficult hole, such a difficult hole. And then you get to 12, tough hole again. 13, you got to score on. 14, you get out of there with par, fine. 15, you got to score on. You can't be left off the tee and get blocked out by those trees. You got to be middle or right and possibly give yourself a chance to go for the screen. Now, it is tough because you have 16 behind it with the water on that par 3 that if you do go long and you don't get a good bounce, we've seen guys go in that water behind the hole and you're like, what are you doing? Because the water in front of the hole, you kind of have to carry so much and land it soft. It's not the easiest shot going for the green in two. Now, if you have a better layup option and you're confident in your wedges and you can make a 12-footer versus maybe a 5-footer if you hit a good eagle putt, there you go. But I'd say this. 15 isn't as easy as people think it is, because a lot of the time you think, okay, you're down two. You could possibly tie it if you've eagle 15. Eagle at 15 is a lot harder than the eagle at 13 is. If you hit your drive in the fairway at 13, you're not going to be having the biggest lumber into that green. It's not the longest hole. It's just difficult because the way it's shaped, and for the right-handed player especially to draw the ball, because everybody fades it nowadays, it just seems like, especially the right-handers off the tee, the power hitters. So 13 shaped that way. But if you hit a good one off the tee, you're in a good spot to score. 15 is almost a second shot hole or a third shot hole, because the fairway is wide enough, but if you're not past where the trees jut out on the left, you're obviously laying up. But a lot of the most of the guys carry it anyway, so it's not the biggest deal. So then after 15, you go to 16, where we've seen so much magic. We've also seen that hole cost some guys previously, where they haven't hit the green, they haven't made their two putt and made par and go to 17, 18. They've put it in the bunker, missed their par putt, and then make bogey, and you're like, you needed par there. You needed to go steal a birdie on 17 or 18 or have somebody come back to you. You couldn't miss that short par one coming out of the bunker, but the par safe putt. But 16 is not the most difficult hole, but where it's positioned in the golf course with the pressure, it is. You know, to make a – you got to make a two to make a cut, or make a par to make a cut. You got to make a par or birdie to get within one to get into the final pair. You know, those – it's not the most difficult hole on the property, but – where it's positioned in the golf course and in the whole structure, the course layout, it does get your nerves up. And especially 17 is not an easy hole. People kind of take it for granted. You make your par, you go to 18, go up the chute. And 18 is a difficult hole when you got to hit that uphill second shot, three-tier green, land it on the right tier, give yourself a putt. But again, that is also tremendously difficult. So where you score, you have to. The par fives, maybe even three, you know, amen corner, you if you go par, par, birdie, that's pretty good. That's not going to kill you at amen corner, par, par, birdie. Now, bogey, par, par, that hurts. Or bogey, bogey, par, that really hurts. That really hurts. So those are, I mean, you know the holes. You know the hole locations. Obviously, with what Golf Digest is saying, maybe we get some new hole locations, but it's very rare, to be fair. So from the course, let's go to the storylines. Tiger Woods back at Augusta. He's played one competitive round this year, withdrew in the cold last year, 47th in 2022, didn't play in 2021, and he was tied 38th in 2020 after winning in 19 at November Masters. So Tiger back, obviously his health is the concern, but it is a course that he's won at, and it's a course that after he didn't win for a long time, he won at. So you can never really count him out, especially if he's in contention, because what he did in 2019 was just be in contention. 12, Finau, Koepka, and Molinari all dumped it in the water, and he took the lead and never looked back. Right, so he is obviously a gigantic storyline. He's why a lot of the people in the field to begin with out of these 89, 90 players are golfers, Tiger Woods. And if they're not, maybe it's someone that was influenced by influenced Tiger Woods. So there you go with that. So Tiger Woods back. I don't have a ton of expectations. Nothing would really surprise me either way, because of his ability, because he's won here so many times, and because he's just such a good player when he's healthy. Now, if he gets hurt and has to withdraw and misses the cut, I wouldn't be shocked by that, because he played one competitive round. So there's a lot, it's a big zone here where it could be good, it could be bad. It could be a make cut, you know, tied 50th or some crazy thing, or tied 30th, whatever. So we'll see Tiger. All right, Rahm is defending. 5 top 10s in his last 6 master starts. He was trending to win. He got it last year. He makes the big move to LIV. Now he's kind of being one of the mouthpieces for LIV, saying, hey, maybe we should go to 4 rounds. Hey, maybe we should try to get back with the PGA. Like, so I don't know. I don't – the LIV stuff still doesn't sit right with me. I'll never root for those guys. I don't really concern myself. I don't watch LIV clips. I don't watch the LIV tour. I don't really think about the LIV until these guys come play the majors. I guess I think about it then. But Rahm's a hell of a golfer. You have a little bit of that Spanish aura at Augusta with Seve, with Jose Maria, with John Rahm. So he's obviously a factor going into this one. But again, with the LIV guys, and we'll touch on them later, the conditioning of playing 4 rounds, like they don't do it anymore. They don't do it anymore. Now, I understand Neiman went and did it for the Australian Open. We can touch on him in a little bit. But Koepka, DJ, some of these other guys, like they don't play 4 rounds of golf in a row. And they certainly don't play it at these level golf courses on that tour. No offense. So you got Rahm. Scotty Scheffler's the favorite, going for his 2nd green jacket. Tee to green, he's the best player. Top 10s in 8 of his last 11 major championship starts. So he's always in contention. He's always in the mix. If he putts well, he could win this thing by 5, 6, 7, 8 shots. If he putts it well. Because tee to green, he is that good. Ball striking, he is that good. Short game is pretty solid. The putter is the issue. And it's not just like, okay, you know, so you wish he had a little bit more of that lag. Oh, you wish he made a 5 or 6 footer here and there more. He's missing like 3 footers, 5 footers to force playoffs and stuff. That's bad. You can't be doing that. And it seems like if he's running away, the putter isn't the biggest deal. But if it's a tight tournament, if he's trying to close a gap or somebody's closing a gap on him, he's going to miss a couple shorties and let you back in it. So if you're anybody else in this tournament, you got to stay within 3 to 4 shots of Scheffler, it seems like, just to say, hey, man, if you screw up with that flat stick, I'm here, you know? So, and he's putted it better since going to the mallet, and that was Rory McIlroy's idea. So speaking of Rory, Rory's going for the career Grand Slam. It is his 10th attempt at it. He has not won a major since 2014. 16th start at Augusta National. 7 top 10s, last 10 master starts. However, 2 of the last 3, he's been cut. In the last 8 majors, 7 out of 8 top 10s. His game has been trending up. Yes, he was cut the last 2 years, 2 out of 3 years, sorry. But in between those, very good finishes. And I think he just put so much pressure on himself last year with him being the mouthpiece, him standing up for the tour versus LIV, him being the guy front and center for everything. The golf, I don't want to say came second for him, but his role as that ambassador almost overshadowed the golf. And I think even seeing it last year at the Open into the Ryder Cup, he's made it more about the golf. You can tell he's made it more about the golf. So I think it's Rory's tournament. I do. I think Scheffler is vulnerable if you're hanging around. And I think at some point it's Rory's time. And if it's not him, it's Spieth. We'll get to Spieth. But Rory, at some point, has to win this tournament. Tiger Woods said it. He's too good not to win this tournament. And, you know, you're looking at a guy, Tiger Woods, this is his 23rd, 24th start. He's been at this tournament for a long time. And he's missed some years. Rory McIlroy, still in his 30s. Still got plenty of golf to go. Has maybe 4, 5, 6 prime opportunities at this into his 40s, early 40s, the way he's holding it up in his body. But at some point, he's going to break through. And he's a Rotella guy. He keeps banging on the door. One of those doors is going to open for him. I think it's this week. Now, if it isn't Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth has one of the best records at Augusta National, but no second jacket. Six top fives, and he hasn't won a major since 2017. So Spieth and Rory, for me, I think at some point will be in the winner's circle of major championships again. Their game is too good. They've had the experience of winning them before. They're both grown up and matured a little bit. They both have gained perspective with having children and all that kind of stuff that they all talk about in the features of in the interviews, right? But for the golf, this is a course that just fits Jordan Spieth's eye. He shapes the ball. He's creative. He's able to putt to spots and hit long lag putts at this place because he knows the breaks. So Spieth, if not Rory, my two picks. It's amazing how Spieth does not have a second jacket. You really don't. The Danny Willett one that he blew, I don't think he'll ever forgive himself for. And I don't think I'll ever forgive him for, to be fair. But there have been other ones where you're looking like, oh my God, Jordan Spieth. Here he comes. And he finishes well, but he just doesn't win it. So Spieth, a great record, one green jacket. Rory, a pretty solid record, no green jackets. Colin Morikawa has two major championships, seven top tens in 16 starts at major championships. But this one, besides the one where he finished with Rory holing out the bunker shots 2 years ago, he hasn't had the best time at Augusta National. And I think if he's not able to hit his shot shape consistently, and he's a fader, this doesn't set up for the righty faders as much as it does the lefty fader. If you saw that piece on Golf Digest or golf.com, one of those. Sorry, whoever's piece that was, and I got it wrong. It's either golf.com or Golf Digest, the YouTube channels. Look it up. I know they're probably competing or competitors, whatever. I'm sorry. But Morikawa, he doesn't just have one. He has two. That's important. Another guy that has two, Justin Thomas. Two top tens at Augusta. He just split from Bones, so a new caddy on the bag for JT. Mildly concerning because Bones has won that tournament with Phil a few times, and you're like, don't you want to have him on your bag? No, okay, fine. But JT, who in some areas struggles because he amps himself so much up for these major championships, in other places like Southern Hills, finds his way fighting back into a playoff and winning it for his second major championship. So he has two Wanamakers, no other ones. He's looking to get a green jacket. Only two top tens. You would hope better. All right, the recent major champs, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Wyndham Clark making his debut. There hasn't been a debutant winner at Augusta since 79, Fuzzy Zeller. So Wyndham Clark trying to do that. And he's not a regular debutant. I mean, he's won a major championship, so to be fair. And also, Brian Harman, I just mentioned lefties before. Brian Harman, if he could, you know, ever, like, chill out with the waggles and actually hit the golf ball, that's a guy that could win at Augusta. Great putter, lefty, can fade it, and that's what you kind of need as a lefty if you're going to win there. So, and Fitz has had some good runs and some bad finishes as well. How about Victor Hovland? Three top tens in his last five majors, tied seventh last year. Hovland has apparently changed coaches after having a pretty good year last year and then thinking you're going to, you know, have success with that guy again. He's like, nah, I didn't like it. It wasn't sustainable, so I've changed. So you got him coming in with a new swing or a couple new aspects to his swing, I guess. So you have Victor Hovland, who is an excellent, excellent ball striker, a guy that can get hot with the putter, and has improved his short game tremendously, and you need a good short game at Augusta National because you're going to miss some greens, because you're going to miss some fairways and not have the best yardages or angles into these greens where you have to land the ball specifically. So that's Victor Hovland's story. How about Will Zalatoris, who was banged up the majority of last year, but he's had great finishes in major championships. 3 seconds or tied seconds in three different majors, six top tens in nine starts. Six top tens and nine starts. That's an outstanding record in major championships for a young player, especially a guy who has had some issues with the putter. And now you think he's cleaned it up a little bit. You know, he's feeling better. with the back, with the with some of the other issues that he's had. So Zalatoris is a guy that has the game, seems to have had the mentality. Yes, I know he lost the playoff in Southern Hills. Yes, you could say he lost it to Fitzpatrick at the U.S. Open, but he had to put himself in those opportunities as a young player. And he's done well. And is it his turn to win one of these now? Absolutely could be. Xander Schauffele, the gold medalist from the previous Olympics, three top tens at Augusta. And he's a guy that you would say, hey, maybe you should have won one of these, you know, by now. Very consistent player, good caddy, good teamwork. Rarely hits the wrong shot in the sense of maybe it's not the best shot, but it didn't kill him or knock him out of the hole kind of a thing, or knock him out of a tournament. It only, you know, it was the best damage they could take. So I think Xander is ready to win a major. Is it this one? I'm not sure. How about Max Homa, who's off his first good finish in a major championship? Cantlay, Finau, Corey Connors in this group. Can one of these guys break through? Cantlay has Joe Lacava on the bag now, a guy that's won at Augusta a bunch. Has that sense around the place. One with Freddie Couples, one with Tiger. Now he's on Cantlay's bag. I think Max is in a really good spot where if he can find himself on the weekend in one of the few final pairings on Saturday and hanging around Sunday, he can, you know, make a charge and play some really good golf, because I think he's at a really good place in his life and centered and balanced, and hopefully he's ready to go. I'm a big fan of Max. Everybody knows that. Matsuyama, the former champ. Justin Rose, the former U.S. Open champ. Always on these leaderboards. Tommy Fleetwood's always kind of been on these leaderboards. Four top 10 finishes in his last seven major championship starts. Unfortunately, Tommy and his caddy, Finney, is not going to be on the bag. He's been ill the whole year, so prayers and hopefully he gets better. But Tommy will have a local caddy, which is a different flavor for sure. But that kid will want to have a good fun. He'll want to have a good week, that's for sure. That could be his best week of the year. And also, Shane Lowry's been on these leaderboards, and Shane Lowry's been playing some good golf in major championships and big moments like Ryder Cups. So you have to think about those guys. How about this group of Sam Burns, Cam Young, Sungjae, Siwoo Kim, Tom Kim, Minwoo Lee, Thigala. Minwoo Lee hurt his fingers. Like, I'm playing. What do you mean? This is the Masters. I love that guy. You could argue that some of those guys I just mentioned are young guns, but Aberg, Akshay Batati, who just won last week. How about you guys got resurgence from Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, some past champions in the field, Adam Scott, Danny Willett, Mike Weir, Zach Johnson, and then some former major champs in the field, Keegan Bradley, Gary Woodland as well. How about the live guys? 13, including the aforementioned John Rahm. DJ, to me, has checked out, but he could always turn it on if he hits good wedges and putts, because his he could just absolutely power the golf ball. We know that. Cam Smith has four top 10s at Augusta, and you could argue he could have his own jacket. Four rounds in the 60s in that November one, if I'm not mistaken. Only player to do that and not win, if I believe so. I believe that stat's correct. So you got Cam Smith, who's been good at Augusta. Brooks Koepka has five majors. Got his fifth last year. He is a major champion golfer. He just seems to have taken a paycheck at LIV and just said, as long as I can get into these majors, I don't care. And to play less golf is fine with me, because these tournaments mean more. 17 finishes of tied seven or better in major championships. Like, that's pretty crazy. Like, yes, just outside top 10, so you can manipulate the numbers there, fine. But 17, he's been tied seven or better, including those five wins. So 12 other top sevens. That's a pretty good record. And Koepka, you know, is just ready and primed to go for these major championships. Bryson DeChambeau, Mr. Par 67, Mr. Nerd. Obviously, I will always root against him. He made it super easy by going to LIV. Everybody knows that from my stance. But I will never forgive him for saying par 67 about one of the greatest golf courses ever made, ever constructed, and ever played on in sports, and one of the more important places in sports history. The fact that you have these competitions at professional golf level of major championships where they all rotate. They all go to different courses except one. And he has the audacity to go out there and call it a par 67. Get lost. All right, you got the other major champions from LIV, or the other Augusta champions, I say. Phil, Bubba, Sergio, Schwartzel, Patrick Reed, and then Neiman, Moronic, and Hatton, the other invitees for the Livers. All right, the odds. Scheffler, the overall favorite, 4-1. Rory, second choice, 10-1. The defending champ, John Rahm, 12. Xander Schauffele at 16. And you got Koepka and Matsuyama at 18-1. Spieth, 20. Åberg and Neiman, 25-1. Åberg, that's crazy. To have him above some of these other guys, that's crazy. I'm sorry. First Masters, come on. Clark, 28-1. Hovland, 30-1. Cantley, Zalatoris, Cam Smith, 33-1. I don't know how Aberg's above Cam Smith. Justin Thomas, 35-1. Bryson and DJ at 40. Finau and Fitz at 45. Fleetwood, Lowry, Cam Young, Kalmar, Kawa, 50-1. You got Homa, Burns, and Thigala, 55-1. J-Day, 60-1. The Whistling Straits PGA champ. Hatton, Harmon, Reed, 65-1. Minwoo Lee and Russell Henley, 70-1. Connors and Kim, 80-1. Sungjae Im, 100-1. Scott, 110. Tiger, Justin Rose, Ricky, and Tom Kim, 120. So my picks, I got Rory or Spieth to win it. I got Rory, Spieth, top five, along with Scottie Scheffler. Top 10, JT, Morikawa, Zalatoris, and then top 20s I threw on Homa, Minwoo Lee, Fitz, Fleetwood, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, and do you think Tiger Woods is going to be in a golf tournament? I'm not going to put a top 20 or something on him. I did it. So there you go. All right, let's go to footy. Champions League, quarterfinal, first legs. Arsenal-Bayern, what a match this was. It finishes 2-2 at the Emirates. Bukayo Saka got the scoring started with a great goal. Serge Gnabry leveled it 1-1, and then Sané drew a penalty. Harry Kane scored the penalty, and then in the second half, Trossard, an equalizer for Arsenal that set the Emirates on fire. There was a penalty shout at the death. It was waved away. Bukayo Saka went in and stuck his leg out to make contact with Neuer. I think that was fair. If you're upset about that not being a penalty, if it was against you, I think you'd be freaking out. I would be freaking out if that was a penalty given against me, and if it wasn't given for my team, I wouldn't be shocked, one, with Liverpool, but two, I would say, okay, he stuck his leg out. He played the ball to the left. He could have went and got the ball and probably scored. Going for the penalty there is a little crazy to me, but hey, it is what it is. So anyway, you had that penalty shout out for Arsenal, but Munich had one as well where Arsenal had started a goal kick sequence, and I believe it was Gabriel or Saliba, I'm not sure, put their hand on the ball and started over again. So letter of the law, it's a penalty. But the ref was like, I'm not giving that penalty. I don't know, man. The other game, Tuesday, Real Madrid, Man City finishes 3-3 at the Bernabeu. Bernardo Silva, great free kick, 2 minutes in. Then Madrid scored 2-2 as an own goal equalizer off Ruben Diaz. And then a Rodrigo goal gave Real Madrid a 2-1 lead. Phil Foden, a banger equalizer, left foot just outside the box. Then Guardiola, a weak foot golazo to put City up 3-2 after everybody thought he was going to Real Madrid. He goes to City and he scores against Real Madrid. And then Valverde, the Uruguayan, on a volley, leveled it. Brilliant strike. 3-3. Great match at the Bernabeu. It's all to play for at the Etihad, as it is all to play for at the Allianz next week as well in Munich. All right, the other games on Wednesday. Atletico Dortmund. Atletico win it 2-1. DePaul pounced on a Kobel mistake, the Dortmund keeper, early on in the match to give Atletico a 1-0 lead. And then Lino got a second for Simeone's men. Haller pulled one back for Dortmund. So big, even though the road goal difference isn't the same difference anymore, but it is big to get a goal coming back home. PSG Barcelona. Barcelona win it 3-2 at the Parc des Princes. Rafinha opened the scoring after Donnarumma came for a ball, cleared it, half cleared it. It came out to Rafinha. Good finish with defenders on the line. Dembele equalized it for PSG. Big celebration against his former club. I'd be like, hey, man. Okay, noted. Vitinha, go-ahead goal. 2 and 2 minutes for PSG. They were trailing 1-0. They're up 2-1, just like that. Rafinha A second levels it. He gets subbed off. Christensen comes on. Set piece for Barcelona. Header in by Christensen. Really his first action of the match. And that's how that one finished. Barcelona 3-2 coming back home to Barcelona. I was going to say the Nou Camp. The games aren't there. Coming back home to Barcelona as the Nou Camp gets renovated. All right. So that was where the Champions League quarterfinal first legs. Weekend soccer preview. Newcastle, Tottenham at St. James Park. Newcastle not had the best year in the Prem. Ton of injuries. A lot of people questioning Eddie Howe. You have Tottenham who are fighting for top four. And you could theorize top five will probably get you into Champions League with the extended, but you want to make sure about it. But Tottenham fighting against Villa. Obviously Man United as well, but really those two teams. Away from home, haven't been the same. They play better at home, Tottenham do, but they have gotten a little healthier here. You wonder if Basuma is going to get back in the team, but it's really been Bentancur with Saar and Madison. Johnson and Werner have been ahead of Kulusevski and Richarlison, and then you got Son in the middle there. Madison is so good. And then they've settled a lot of their defense. Van de Ven has come alongside Romero, been really good. Vicario's been good between the posts and the fullbacks between Pedro Porro and Udogie have been very attacking but haven't killed you defensively. So I think Newcastle-Tottenham will be a really, really good game on Saturday. Forest-Wolves. Wolves in a good spot. Forest fighting for their lives. Wolves have had a really good season, even with some injuries. The manager's done brilliantly. O'Neill, I thought he's done really well. They've had some decisions go against them, unfortunately, but I think they've had a good season. Forest, they had argued they've had decisions go against them with the Liverpool game. They're wrong about that game. Other games I agree with them on, but they're wrong about the Liverpool game. Forest need the points. They've struggled with Nuno. They've struggled, you know, previously, so we'll see what happens at the City Ground. It's been historically good for them this season. It hasn't been great, so Wolves go there. City Luton. City will have the opportunity to go top of the table before Liverpool and Arsenal play on Sunday. So they host Luton at the Etihad. Luton have been playing tough. They've been hanging in, but this City squad, relatively all systems go health-wise, and if not, they have still players at those positions that can help them out and play. So you got to expect a City victory there, and they'll go top of the league. Burnley-Brighton. Brighton haven't had the best season. They've sold a lot of players again, but they've had some injuries. The Matoma injury, you could argue he was going to be their player of the season, and him getting hurt has really, really cost them in their attack. Burnley, you had better expectations for them. You know, Deitch ball, no offense to Sean Deitch and Everton, but they play a certain specific style. And all you heard about Burnley with Kompany and coming up from the Championship was, they're going to play their style. They're not going to sit back. They're not going to just defend. They're not going to. And sure, they've done that in some games, but other games, they just do not have the quality. This game, they might, because Brighton has had some injuries and had some issues. They're at Turf Moor at home. Try to get 3 points and put the pressure on the other teams to, you know, knock you out instead of just let them go up kind of and stay up and you go down kind of a thing. Brentford and Sheffield United. Brentford have found themselves in this relegation fight now. You thought the Tony suspension would hurt them, but they still would have enough. And Buemo got hurt. Some points Whistle was in and out. So the guys up front haven't been able to be together and scoring goals a bunch. You got to think towards the end of this season, Frank's going to put the three of them together and let them run and score some goals, because that's what you're going to need to stay up. You're going to need goals. You know, 0-0 doesn't necessarily keep you up. Goals do. Sheffield United is in trouble. I know McBurney's had some really big games late in matches to, you know, big moments to level it or get assists, but they're in trouble. Bournemouth, Man U. And since Man U isn't playing Liverpool, I expect them to play horrifically and Bournemouth to run all over them. Because if you don't play Liverpool and you're playing for Man U, you play like garbage. So there you have that. Liverpool Crystal Palace. I will be at this one. Pretty excited for it. So Liverpool with a boost in training. Alisson, Jota, Trent Alexander-Arnold all returning to training. Should be in contention for the Atalanta Europa League match. So they could get some minutes there and then be ready to go Sunday with some more minutes and start to tackle the rest of the season as we head towards the stretch run here. So Liverpool, Crystal Palace. Every time I mention Crystal Palace, Elise and Eze come up. If they're fit, they can change the game. They're dynamic. They have a great relationship with each other as attacking players. And Mateta's been better. IU scored some goals. Edwards come off the bench and score some goals. So they have goal-scoring threats. And Liverpool do concede chances. So it's just about Liverpool converting their chances against the Crystal Palace team that doesn't have the best defense record, that's for sure. So Liverpool, Crystal Palace. Liverpool win there, they would go top. And then you have West Ham, Fulham, and Arsenal, Villa. So if Arsenal win after City win, after Liverpool win, we'd be in the same situation we are as this week. Similar, same on points, but Arsenal ahead on goal difference. So you got West Ham, Fulham, London Derby. That'll be a good match. Fulham have been exciting with Munoz scoring some goals. West Ham, since getting Paqueta back, have been a different side. Looking forward to that game. And then you got Arsenal Villa. Emery against his former team. They could not do the job against City last week. See what they can do against Arsenal this week. It's a tough matchup for sure. Arsenal have been flying. They're doing a great job not conceding, and then they just get goals going the other way. Villa, at some point, had to put their flag in the ground and beat a big team. They've done well against some of the other teams, but they haven't done great against some of the big teams. So that'll be a big one. And then Chelsea-Everton on Monday. Chelsea should have at least, I'm thinking off the top of my head, 4 to 5 to 6 more wins just from having leads and blowing them or just poor play to close out games. La Liga, Atletico and Girona. Mallorca play league leader Real Madrid. And Cadiz host Barcelona. Serie A, Turin host Juventus. Sassuolo welcome in AC Milan. And Inter play Cagliari at the San Siro. Bundesliga action, Munich and Cologne. Gladbach and Dortmund. Rebel Leipzig, Wolfsburg, and Leverkusen try to stay unbeaten. They host Werder Bremen. All right, so a big, big weekend in sports. You got the Masters, so we will recap that on hopefully Tuesday's show. I think Tuesday's show. The latest, it'll be out on like Tuesday afternoon or something, but whatever. So Tuesday's show, we'll have a Masters recap. Maybe a Liverpool recap as well. But yeah, big footy weekend, big Masters weekend. Enjoy it. I'll talk to you next week. Until then, peace.
Sometimes Other Sports Show. That's the name of it? Guys, check out his podcast. That sounds like my kind of podcast. Football, 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 and Sometimes Other Sports Show. Sounds like me.